Welcome to Show People on the 10th Voice. I'm Michael Grayman Parkhurst, and we are here to celebrate LGBTQ theater artists and allies here in Kansas City and around the country. I am joined by our fantastic engineer today. Hey, Kate Redman.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a good week. It really has.
Yeah?
It's been a good month since the last time we spent any time together.
I miss you. It does tend to go by kind of fast. Also, I'm like, oh, but it's the third Saturday of the month. What did you do this week? How was your week?
This past couple of weeks, we finally got our three-time rescheduled, thank you, COVID, Caribbean cruise in. So we just got back to Kansas City this past Wednesday. We've been hanging out in the Bahamas and St. Martin's and, the Southern Caribbean for the last week.
Wait, so you said it was a week-long cruise?
Yeah, 7 days.
Oh, I've heard St. Martin is incredible.
It's beautiful. We did a bike tour there, so we went with a group of people, and we just rented some bicycles.
Okay.
And we just went riding around St. Philip's. Now, St. Martin is an island that's French and Dutch.
And Dutch, right.
And it's split. So we were on the Dutch side, but we didn't cross over onto the French side this year. We've been to St. Martin's before where we have done that.
Right.
But we just kind of stayed close to St. Philip's this trip.
Oh, that sounds lovely. What was it like to be back on a cruise? How is that?
They're really nice right
post-COVID.
Now.
Post-COVID.
A lot of the COVID restrictions are being relaxed.
Okay.
Now, of course, we do still mask. Like if I go into a store and I don't know who's in there and I don't know what their vaccination status is or anything, I'm still masking up. But the nice thing about the cruise, the ship holds 4,000 guests and there were only 2,700 on it. So, they're still growing back.
Yes.
Which gives you more opportunity for, various activities and shore excursions and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Congratulations on getting back out there on vacation.
Thank you.
Oh, that sounds nice. That sounds really nice right now. We've got a great guest today. I'm so excited, Kate. We are going to be chatting with our guest about one of Kansas City's great arts icons, Starlight Theater. And our guest in studio today is currently Starlight Theater's Chief Operating Officer, Lindsay Rude Clifford. Welcome to Show People.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Good. Good. It's a beautiful day in Kansas City and a nice weekend. And we've got a show up at the theater, but
yep.
I actually have a few weekend nights to myself, which doesn't happen very often. So
really?
I'm enjoying that.
That's good.
Filled it with other theater, though. So
that's good. Are you going? Good. Great. What are you seeing?
So I was at the ballet's opening night last night, and then I'm actually headed right after this to a show that my niece wrote called At the Altar of Diana out at the Culture House Stage and Studio. So I'm headed there right when we're done here. So I'm really excited for that.
At the Altar of Diana. Ooh,
yeah.
I like that. I want to catch up on how that is after you see it. Oh, cool. How did the summer Starlight season go? How was it?
I guess I would say it was almost like being back in 2019.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But maybe better because we had 2 years without, so we all appreciated it a little bit more.
Yes.
So I think there was I think for a lot of people, there was a little bit of both of like, oh, we're back into it. And we were out of it for so long that it felt like a lot. And at the same time, those of us that were maybe dying a little bit at home during the quiet of the 2 years of the pandemic, we're really happy to see people out and have live music and have live theater. And it was pretty magical. It was like rediscovering it. I said that was one of the nice things about the pandemic, if there were nice things or if we can find silver linings
out of
now,
it. Yes, yes.
Is I said it's like going back and going to the theater again for the first time or going to your first concert again and like that feeling of excitement. It was just really special.
That's a great point. I love that. It did feel that because I say we went, we took our, we brought our five-year-old to Starlight for the first time to see sister act. Our good friend Ann Tolpagan was playing Mother Superior. So we were so excited to get there and see that. And I'm not sure if it was a great 5.5-year-old show to see, but I think he loved it. He was like,
the music is enthralled. Fun. And if you don't pay attention to the story too much, I'm sure the five-year-old did fine.
Did just
bop right along.
Fine. Yes, he did bop right along. But it did feel like that. People were out and about again.
Yeah. It was nice to have people. I mean, we had, especially on the concert side, we had sellouts this year. So there were 8,000 people out there, and you could tell that there was this sort of pent up demand. And, you know, as much as we all like to Netflix and chill, there was something about being back with other people to experience theater and music, and you could feel it.
Starlight is a magic place. It really is. It's like I feel like the weather always kind of does well there. It's always a comfortable evening.
The weather's a whole factor. I always say I didn't know that weatherman was going to be like my other duties as assigned in my career, but we all take it very seriously, and we all watch our weather underground pretty religiously.
Have to, right?
Yeah, you do.
The night we went to see Sister Act, we thought it was going to be canceled because it was like there was like this break, and like it had been stormed all day, and then it opened up, and then it rained maybe the last half hour of the show.
You know, people worry about the weather out there, but I think we average one rain out every 3 years. So it's hardly a factor most of the time. And most people's memories, I would say there's this visceral thing about theater in and of itself is memorable. But then when you're outside, it's totally a visceral experience that you remember. Because most people remember it's like Starlight War stories. They remember the time that they got rained on or the time that they were sliding out of their seat. It was so hot.
Right.
But they remember the show better than any other show because it's like really, really cemented in your memory.
It's true, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, this goes back a lot of years, like 10 or 15 years. And the show was Dr. Dolittle. Huh. And it was like, okay, we knew there were storms in the forecast. You know, my weather underground was beeping at me. I live on the west side of the city, and it was already telling me that, you know, you got a T-storm warning coming. Mm-hmm. And what was so amazing about that show is the cast skipped the intermission, ran all the way through as a single shot, and we actually got back to our car just as the storm hit at Starlight.
Again, the magic of Starlight.
And sketchy weather nights, we get the best out of casts. Those are the nights because they're like, these people are in ponchos sitting out here in the seats. We're going to give them the best show we possibly can. Those are sometimes the best shows you'll ever see.
I love it. I'm excited to bring Sammy to many more Starlight experiences.
And it's a great place for kids. I mean, that's great. I raised my kids going there, and I think my now 14-year-old, I remember walking up and down that hill with him when he was one or two or three, or sleeping through the second acts, but it's really accessible in that way, which is also, I think, special.
It is. Yeah, so you and your husband, Chris, you have a 14-year-old, right?
We have a 14-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 21-year-old.
That's right. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So we got two out of the house, and one that we're 5 years on the off-ramp for.
Okay, yep, okay.
He's probably listening. So.
I'm sure he is. Does he like, do you go to Starlight with Chris, and what's your 14-year-old's name?
Peyton. His name is Peyton.
Does he like to come to Starlight?
He loves to come to Starlight. He is a theater kid, so two out of our three kids are theater kids.
Oh, wonderful.
Our oldest is actually a senior in college studying musical theater.
Oh, where?
At Southeast Missouri.
Yeah.
She's actually in Norway right now studying abroad doing a theater program, so... So she's living it up. And then 14 is a theater kid, a football kid, a scout kid, into all the things.
All of it.
He's getting ready to make his middle school theater lead acting debut as Buddy the Elf in Elf Junior.
Fun. Oh, good. So, you know, the whole family goes out to Starlight.
We do.
Oh, I love that. I'm so happy having you here. But there's, you know, a cool announcement, too, that's been made recently. You have... recently named the new president and CEO of Starlight. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I know current president and CEO Rich Baker is retiring from the position in...
at the end of March.
Can you tell us about your new leader position and how it came about?
Well, I think it will be the 7th or 8th job title I've had in my tenure at Starlight Theater. Okay. I started in 2007. But as we're looking ahead, I mean, really, it's a credit to the organization and where we were at and what our board of directors was thinking about at the time. We're in the very early stages of a major capital campaign and sort of improvements around the theater and programmatic expansion. And so as I think we were thinking about what was important for the theater moving forward, it was about continuity and history. And while Rich came from St. Louis and came from the Fox Theater, I think, you know, being a native Kansas Cityan and someone who has pretty deep roots in the city and the theater community was something that I think was ultimately important to them. And I've been there for 16 years, and I think that's it's a long time to be somewhere these days. So it's a really, really exciting thing to be a part of. And I feel really honored and humbled. And I keep saying, I hope in a year that it feels awesome. Because right now I just feel like a lot of excitement and sort of nervous jitters around not wanting to let anybody down because they love Starlight. And it's a very, I keep saying it's not a burden, but it's certainly it's a big deal. And you want to steward that legacy in a really meaningful way.
But who better for it than you? I think sometimes so many organizations do think they need to go do a major national search or bring somebody in. And I think there really is something about somebody who is from Kansas City and has a love and an experience with the organization. You don't have to teach something to some. I mean,
yeah, I think there's the learning curve is somewhat less as a result. Right. And I think I've been surprised by how many people have expressed, I hesitate to say inspiration, but inspiration that you can still work hard, work your way up in an organization. Right. I think anymore we talk about how people jump around from jobs and that's the only way to advance. And frankly, it's kind of nice to be able to say I've been somewhere as long as I've been there and I still love it. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of employees like that at Starlight too. So I think that's really about people's kind of deep and abiding love for the organization. Both of your work in there, you know, our patrons tend to be a lot of times people that have been coming for decades.
Right.
So there's this Starlight tradition that people really feel deeply about. And so it's just nice to be a part of that.
So it does feel like a family there?
Yes, it does. It's it's very much a family environment. I mean, our longest tenured employee has been there for 25 years and she started as a summer intern too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Kind of crazy.
Yes, but I love that because it really truly becomes a family place. How long was Rich Baker at Starlight?
It will be 9 years when he leaves.
Got it. The indoor series started under Rich Baker, right? Was that...
It did.
One of his... did he bring that to Starlight or did it develop while he was there?
So when he came, one of the first things that he saw was that we were sort of a seasonal business. And I think bringing indoors was a way to make us a year-round operation so that we could sort of grow our staff. We were highly seasonal at the time and seasonal is hard, certainly hard to retain, I think, great talent. So that was one of his ideas of how we could just leverage the space on a year-round basis. And that's something that we're going to be continuing to grow as well. Right now, we sort of do an off-Broadway theater series.
Right.
And in the future, we're looking at expanding that to include some more dedicated a theater series for young audiences.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so fun that was kind of developed recently because you would think about, I mean, I know the summer season keeps everybody busy year-round so much, but what an interesting way to kind of keep the audiences and... It does probably keep you even more busy during the year.
It does. And I think that was a change for the Starlight team even, which was used to kind of being very busy during the summertime, getting a little break during the winter. But this is also a way to, I keep saying, it's kind of like we become a Transformer Performing Arts Center because we have this 466 seat indoor theater. And in the summer, we have both a half house and the full house set up. And we just sort of transform from one to the other, depending on the show and the artist and what we're bringing in. But it's a nice way to keep a civic asset busy year round.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, we are here today with Lindsay Rood Clifford, and we're going to take our first break and we will be right back. And we're back on Show People, and we are here today with Chief Operating Officer at Starlight Theater, Lindsay Rood Clifford. Hey, by the way, what is playing right now? I know there's something playing in the indoor series. Right now,
we actually have The Crown live. So it's a parody of Netflix's The Crown series.
Yeah.
We've been saying it's a very affectionate tribute right now, especially considering the Queen's passing. But right. I watched the show Wednesday night, and it really, if you've watched the Netflix series, you certainly appreciate it. But I think even if you've just been thinking a lot about British history and where things have been, it's a really neat, fun show.
Are these actors coming over from
UK? They are.
Okay.
So they actually, as history happened live in September, they made some changes to the show.
Naturally.
To be able to come over, just knowing kind of where things are at. But it's a very, very, very sweet, very funny show.
I bet that's doing well. I mean, I would imagine that would be doing well.
The laughter would say as much from when I was there. Yeah, it's doing well for us. And the first time indoors has been back for us since before the pandemic. So we've been 2 years off from that.
So you're back with The Crown. Excellent.
Yeah.
A parody. Great. Oh, good. Good. Congratulations on that getting
Thank
up and running
you.
Again, too. Tell us a little bit about what the transition, because I'm imagining you're already starting the transition process.
Oh, yes.
From COO to CEO. What is that, as far as your day-to-day responsibilities with something like?
So I've said it kind of feels like having two full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. But it's a gift also. I think one of my observations has been that a lot of times when you do go outside to search for a new leader and they come in, it takes them a while because there is a learning curve. Takes you just a while to learn how an organization operates and the people that are associated with it. So this gift of being able to understand the organization pretty broadly right now, but then also get visibility to things that I haven't had before I officially take over, understand context and lay of the land, and certainly try to soak up everything I can from Rich and his experience. That's been a real gift. And 6 months, we're down to 6 months right now. We knew internally that this was kind of the direction we were heading last April, but it wasn't publicly announced until September. Right. So a year sounded like a long time, but it is flying. And then I'm also trying to transition my old roles as well. So I came up to COO from the head of our philanthropy department. So I was sort of in charge of external relations and fundraising and advocacy. So we're transitioning that through an internal promotion as well. So transitions up yes. and down the line in the organization.
Are you going to be training a new chief operating officer, or is it a combo? How is it working right now? I don't know if you're allowed to say anything.
Yeah, but this was actually the first time that we had created the role of COO at Starlight. So it was created at the time to sort of be a transitional role, but we're on the front end of a big strategic planning process right now. So we'll see. We're sort of evaluating what the future structure is internally to best serve kind of where we're headed as an organization too.
What are for the campaign that's coming on? What are some of the goals with that?
So there's some major venue enhancements that we'll be making. Those aren't public yet, so I can't share those here. But they're going to change the face of the venue dramatically. I would say as dramatically as when we enclosed the stage house in 2000. They're really exciting. And then we're also doing some programming expansions as well. So we're going to be launching 5 new programs as a part of that. That'll kind of help fill in the gaps with our current programming and sort of expand based off of our goals now to figure out where we can create more arts access and more sort of industry workforce development opportunities as well.
Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, we're going to have you back again to talk about, you know, as we learn more. My husband, Andrew, he was part of Starlight growing up as well. So he performed there before it was enclosed with the air conditioning. And then I think he was in either the first show or the first season when it was enclosed. So he kind of got to experience.
Very, very different. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Starlight. We often talk about, we go over to St. Louis where the Muni is, which is still an open air theater. Right. It's the one most like us. But when you think about the enhancements that we've made to Starlight over the course of almost 75 years in the name of saying, hey, where do we want to be? What do audiences need? What does the community need? They've been pretty dramatic, and we've been very fortunate that the community's always been supportive of that, because they really, again, I think treasure that Starlight tradition.
Yes, it is. It is a major tradition. I mean, probably one of the most, I mean, as far as an arts tradition, I think, absolutely.
I think so, too. I think one of the things we've talked the most about is just how do we offer that tradition to more people? Because I think when we talk about traditions in Kansas City, certainly history of theater, certainly Starlight's history too, it can be a little exclusive. So I think one of the things that we've really tried to focus on is how do we extend that tradition or help people to start create that tradition for the first time so that 30 years from now, 50 years from now, it's a even wider net of people that are enjoying the theater.
It's still a tradition, yeah.
You know, I know one of the reasons that we donate to Starlight is because we see opportunity giving to children and youth to learn about theater, learn about the performing arts. That's something I would have loved to have done growing up in St. Louis. Those opportunities, you know, the Muni never bought into that, and the Fabulous Fox never bought into that, you know, the two major venues. So, you know, I am later in life going and now being involved with Starlight like I am and everything, and just going, I really miss or wish I could have had those opportunities. So I'm really grateful to see Starlight reaching out, you know, with the programs for the youth, especially the high school youth.
Well, first of all, thank you for being a donor, because that's certainly how we get done all of our programming. That's the majority of how they're funded. But I think you touched on what I'm probably most passionate about, too, which is I always often refer to myself as a recovering theater kid. Yes. So the kid who had the nominal amount of talent in high school and then went on, but loves it enough to understand, you know, and if you know, you know, like the power of what the arts can do for young people. It's incredible. And so I think finding those opportunities to bring people in, and Starlight is such a large organization, mm-hmm. That those opportunities are sort of unparalleled in the city just because of size and capacity to kind of bring people into the fold and create those first-time memories of an artistic experience.
Yes, the first-time memories. Yeah, and you're also really great with accessibility, too. I know that's been such a big part of, you know, your job leading up to this too. I know you work with Spinning Tree Theater also works with Variety, the children's charity, to make everything accessible too. So it's amazing that you're constantly reaching out to the community and trying to be
better and better about that. And right. Another silver lining of the pandemic was we were able to complete, with the support of the city, a major ADA improvement to the theater, right. For the first time in a long time too. And that's been a game changer as well. So again, I think it's just thinking about from all the different angles. Mm-hmm. How do you get people in? How do you get people to that first time theater experience, first time music experience? Because it's a great venue for them.
Right, and opening it up to everyone, yeah. Opening it up to people that haven't always had the opportunity to be there.
So. I often say we're like the vanilla cake of theater. I mean, it's not always the most challenging content, but everybody likes it, so it's a great place to start.
That's what it is, absolutely. So you were saying earlier, so you were born and raised here in Kansas City.
I was.
Where? What part of Kansas City were you?
So I'm a South Johnson County kid.
Okay.
Grew up in the Blue Valley School District.
Oh, great.
So I'm a product of those programs out there, which is also why I appreciate, you know, I understand the privilege of funding in public schools and access to the arts through that. So certainly that gives me that perspective, I think, of understanding why it's important when schools don't have that.
Yes, right.
But yeah, Kansas City, born and raised, and grew up doing theater and music, and I'm a choir kid and all the things.
Do you remember when you first fell in love with theater?
You'll be shocked. It's a little on the nose. If you're listening, you don't know, but I have red hair. And so it was Annie. Annie was like the first thing for me.
Naturally. Yeah, I think it was the first thing for everybody. Yes, absolutely.
You're a little redheaded kid.
Absolutely. Was it the cast album, or was it, did you see it? Did you see it somewhere?
So I saw it, and actually the 1980s movie was what sort of introduced me the first time. Yeah. But then seeing it live, and actually to come full circle, my 14-year-old played Daddy Warbucks this last summer. And it was about the cutest thing I've ever seen, because, you know, when that first show that kind of gets you, and some people, Annie's one of those shows that I think you either love or you hate, but I love it. I have a soft spot in my heart for it.
It's a good show.
It really
like,
is.
All around. It's a special, you can always laugh and just sort of say, oh, Annie, but it's actually a really well-written musical. There's a reason that it stood the test of time.
Great music.
It keeps coming back. Great music. Great music.
I was always a Carol Burnett fan, but I absolutely hated her in that show. She was just so mean.
She was
You
mean.
Did? Is that why you hate her? Because she was
yes.
so mean? Yes. She did it well.
She did it very
well. She did it so well. That's still the best version of the movie. I'm all about the 80s movie, too. Did you perform in school productions as well growing up? Or?
Oh, yes. I have, you know, I was Anna in The King and I in high school, yeah. And... Golda in Fiddler, and again, if you're looking at me, probably not the right role for me, but you know, we had a great time.
Exactly. Naturally. That's also a great show. Great role.
Yeah,
great role.
Exactly. So a lot of classic Broadway growing up for me, and I would say the first my first like real professional experience was here in Kansas City, getting to see Phantom of the Opera. Again, one that you just saw the first time you see that chandelier go up and the magic of theater, it sort of changes your life as a kid.
Yep. Memory. Just closed. Or closing.
Getting ready to close.
Yeah.
That's epic. Selling great as a result.
Of course. Yes. Yes. So, did you grow up with Starlight in your life?
I did grow up with Starlight in my life. I always tell people, I used to have the memories of going with my family when you used to come at the top of the hill, back at the very back, which is the way you do at the Muni in St. Louis, too, before
That's
the stage house was
right,
enclosed.
Yes.
But the ticket office was up at the top of the hill. So you'd come up, go to the ticket office there, and then walk down. And that was actually, it's kind of a more magical way to experience Starlight. It's just not how we bring people in anymore because it's not the most convenient or accessible way to get in. But those are my first memories of going there is kind of top of the hill coming down, seeing the castle, you know, in front of you from that angle.
Because no matter how many times you've been there, that would probably still be like one of those moments. Yeah. I'm here. That's true. The Muni does do that. That's right. I forgot about that.
It's all about where parking is.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Because you come in and you look down, you're like, so many seats, and
so
then
big.
The stage,
yeah.
And yeah.
And as
it's
a young
special.
Person, you just, I mean, it feels huge, but then you're sitting there seeing a show, and somehow it's very intimate. I mean, it's a huge theater for Broadway musicals, right? 8,000 seats is huge.
Right.
But somehow, even when you're in the back, I sat for a show this last summer. I'll go back and sit in the very back rows of Terrace, the very back at the top of the hill.
Yeah.
And it's still a great... great seat in the house.
It is. Again, naturally, with our 5.5-year-old, we worked our way from, like, I don't know, we were like 10th row center, you know, seats, and then, you know, slowly worked our way all the way back up to the very last row, and you still feel so close to it.
Yep. Yep. You can walk just about anywhere. That's I do think that's why it's so great for kids, because you have a little room to maneuver. You're not kind of trapped in a black box.
That's true. There's seats in the back where you can just run up and down the aisle and, you know, do what he needs
run
to do.
Run wherever you want. I mean, go on the lawn in the back. You got plenty of space until they tuck her out.
Yes. Do you remember what your first show was at Starlight that you saw?
Annie. It was Annie.
That was Annie. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I wonder who was in that production. I don't know. Because, I mean, I know Donna Thomason did it a long time ago, right?
So when I started working at Starlight, yeah. I was working for Donna.
Donna, okay.
And yeah. That's the story of Donna and Gary and
yes.
their Annie history.
It's
pretty phenomenal, actually.
But
I don't remember, because I was awfully little when I went, if it would have been them at the time, because it would have been in the 80s. So
yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Okay. So do you think did that introduce you to Annie, or you were already kind of like, I already love Annie?
Oh, I already
loved
Annie.
You were already like wearing out the album,
yeah.
right? Okay. That's so cool.
Yeah. So a lot of Annie's, a lot of my childhood memories, because we do it quite often here in the Midwest, is also Wizard of Oz's. I have a lot of memories of the various Wizard of Oz's.
Yeah, the first show I ever saw growing up, and again, I grew up in St. Louis,
right.
was Wizard of Oz at the Municipal Opera.
We do. We bring it back once in
yeah.
a while, don't we? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We love it here. It's like our show, right?
As a child, I'm still amazed at how they were able to basically what was... the house that Dorothy was in, they were able to lift it off the stage and spin it.
Magic.
Yeah, and you know, here I am, much, much older now. I have a pretty good idea how that happened. But, you know, considering the fact I was probably 7, 8, 9 years old when I saw that, it just amazed me.
It blows you away.
Oh, the first time you see people fly on stage. I mean, that's what I remember from
Absolutely.
The Wizard of Oz, is when you see them flying monkeys, or when Dorothy's flying because of the tornado. And again, as a little person, even today, and I think about, you know, again, Netflix and just what people have access to in terms of entertainment. But there's something about theater that it's when it's done right, when it looks that magical, just takes you into it.
And even when you're an adult, you buy into it too. Like, I mean, even adults are not sitting there saying, oh, I see the wires or whatever. We're just kind of like, cool. It's still cool, you know, today.
We were in New York this summer, and my son and husband came up for the first time with me. We were taking some of Starlight board members to New York to see some shows in the National High School Musical Theater Awards.
Right.
And they went to see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And my husband, who probably could have counted on one hand the number of shows he'd seen before we met, like one hand, maybe.
Right.
But they went and saw that. And I mean, he's kind of a theater person now. He's a total convert. But he was like, it was magical. Just totally immersive.
Yep. I heard that was a great show. I heard that was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. So you were talking about the awards.
National High. Yeah, the Jimmys.
So you, let's talk about the Blue Star. The Blue Star Kids, the Blue Star. Were you a Blue Star kid?
I was a Blue Star kid.
And tell us about the program, too, for people that don't know.
So, the Blue Star Awards is Kansas City's, it's a high school musical theater award program. It was really born as a recognition program, by which I mean, everybody knows if you go to high school that the athletes get the banners, right? You get the banners for the years of your championships. And so at one point, there was this conversation around, gosh, the arts kids work really hard, too. how do we recognize how hard they're working on and off stage? And that's really how the Blue Star Awards was born, was just this desire to say, we know these kids are working hard. Can we as Starlight recognize their achievements? So the way we do that is we send professional artists out into the schools to adjudicate the musical theater that the area schools are putting on. That gives them some really great feedback for their programs. And it's not just about what's happening on stage. It's all of the technical theater. It's, you know, it's set design, it's costume. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of different award categories. And it's really evolved over the years because it started in the mid 2000s, early 2000s. Okay. Right. We just celebrated 20 years of that program, actually. But then it culminates in a big award ceremony out at Starlight in May each year. And we kind of call it like the Tony Awards for high schools. There are over 50 area high schools that now participate in that program. So it's within a 60-mile radius of Starlight.
Wow. You say 50?
50 high schools. Okay. So it's also bringing all these theater kids from around the city, across the state line, out to Starlight. And man, if you could bottle that energy of those kids who are getting this moment, whether they win or not, and I think that's what's pretty amazing, is whether they are sending someone up on stage or not, they are just happy to be together. Mm-hmm. And when someone goes up and wins, even the kids that didn't win are cheering as loud as anybody else for those kids that go up.
Because it's not about that. It's about being part of it all.
So they get those banners. We send banners to the school with it when they're nominated. And we do these in-school nomination presentations for kids where we unveil how many nominations they got for the year. And they put those banners up next to the athletic banners in a lot of schools. So that was always the idea of how do we make sure we're honoring the hard work of these kids and so we do it.
So someone from Starlight does go out to all the schools to do
our whole staff, our board, one day a year, we sort of deploy out to all of the schools that have nominations. And if they've got, you know, a lot of nominations, sometimes the news will come out too, but these schools will hold like rallies in their auditoriums and the kids are, you would think they are winning Tony Awards.
Sure.
Just to be nominated.
Yeah.
So excited.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. And so you remember being a Blue Star kid as well.
Yep. And that was, I mean, it was when the program was being initiated. So there were a lot fewer schools at the time. That's been a minute. But certainly, I mean, it was a big deal. It's still a big deal. My oldest daughter, her school actually was Blue Star nominated too. She took her senior pictures with her Blue Star medal that they get. So it's important. I mean, it's important for where they're at that time in their lives too, to have this recognition of not just achievement, not just the win, but the work.
Yes. Yes. That almost becomes the most important thing.
Yeah.
And then there's the possibility, is it the Blue Star winners that
so
go to?
Right now, it is the top two lead performer categories. So right now, actor and actress. Okay. Starlight sponsors them to go on to the National High School Musical Theater Awards in New York. They spend 10 days in New York where they get to work with Broadway producers and choreographers and directors. And so they get this opportunity of a lifetime, really, to work with, I think it's at least 40 other markets. So it's 80 other students that are up there. I think it was more than that this year. And they do that. And then they get to do their awards ceremony on the Minskoff stage where Lion King is on a Monday night in June.
Right.
So they get to perform on a Broadway stage, and whether they stay in theater or not, they will have done that.
That's it.
So they'll have been on that. They'll have that moment. And so we started taking up a few years ago, our board members and local folks to be able to see. And, you know, we'd take them to other Broadway shows, but we get to that Jimmy Awards program. And a lot of times they'll come back and say, that's the best thing we saw.
That was the best thing we saw. Absolutely.
Because these kids are unbelievably talented. And a lot of them get plucked right out of that award ceremony and go straight into Broadway shows.
I'm seeing them. You're seeing that more. It's true.
We actually have an Olathe East graduate that was our pandemic, our virtual year of the Jimmys. He was a semifinalist there. He went straight from there into the off-Broadway production of Kimberly Akimbo.
Right.
Which is starting in previews, and I'll actually see that next month. So we have, he's 2 years out of school, not quite 2 years out of school, and making his Broadway debut this fall.
Yeah, I think one of my former students is seeing him right now in New York. Yeah, because she knew him from school. I love that. That's great.
Yeah, so hopefully he's got a little piece of Starlight Kansas City in his story now, which is kind of neat too.
There's a lot of Kansas City stories in New York and nationally around the country. Yeah,
we produce a lot of talent out of
this
city.
Sure do.
It's always fun for me to see these people and these youth that have, you know, grown up and had the opportunity to perform on Broadway or perform on a professional stage, you know, to get their equity card or whatnot, and then come back to Starlight.
They do.
They do.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of them do. And it's a neat story. And I think the stories of even those that don't stay in the arts, but keep these memories of what the arts did for them when they were young, those mean almost as much, because not everybody's going to make it to Broadway or be a professional artist. But when we see nurses or lawyers or people working in other industries, but they're good at their jobs because of their involvement in the arts, that's amazing too.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. What led you to KU? What were you when you went to school? What was your were you thinking in high school I want to
be a theater
be
person?
A theater
yeah,
person.
I
yeah,
did.
Yeah.
I will tell you an honest answer on what led me to KU was a full ride scholarship.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a National Merit Scholar, and they give full ride scholarships to that. Yeah. So there were a bunch of other schools that I was looking at the time, but I don't know if my parents Jedi mind tricked me about that at the time. I definitely thought it was my own idea. It is the best decision I ever made to come out without student debt. But Brilliant. That's kind of what drove that at the time. Mm-hmm. But I went in as a double major with theater and English. I kind of popped around between a bunch of different majors. But by sophomore year, I got to this place where I was like, you know, I think I want a steady paycheck, and I don't think I'm talented enough to make a career out of this. But I didn't necessarily have arts administration in my career view at the time either. I actually have an English degree. I have an English lit degree, so still, you know, arts. But I thought I was going to go into publishing and do other things. And then to find out, and actually it's one of the things that I'm probably most passionate about now, is I think we need to be telling people that love the arts about arts administration mm-hmm. as a path for them too, which is why when I think about the future of Starlight and where we can really have an impact as a large organization, it's not just the onstage jobs, mm-hmm. right? It's the backstage jobs, both in tech theater and in arts administration. Because if you love the arts, then you're really well prepared to fill out those roles too.
I love that now we're recognizing that more. I think that's more out in the open to sort of say, this is also there as well. And thank you to everybody that makes this happen. You know,
and
what you're not seeing.
It's not, and I say this as someone with a college student right now, I think when you're an artist in training, sometimes to do anything different can feel like failure. Mm. If I don't make it on stage, am I succeeding? And I think to tell...
Who am I letting down?
Yeah, who am I letting down? Or how do I do that look in the mirror of what my future is going to be? But I think if we start telling young artists, yes, if you want to be an artist, we support you. But also, Absolutely. If you love art, here's all the other things you can do to contribute to an industry that needs people that love art.
Right. It can't be done without it. It is a needed component. It's not an extra outside, less important anything. It's all what makes this all happen.
But a lot of people otherwise fall back. I mean, I would say I didn't fall backwards into it, but I sort of didn't go in thinking that's my path. I'm so glad. I feel like there's been all these moments along the way where I'm like, pinch me. This is my job now.
Yes.
When I got into fundraising for the arts, I thought I'm just supposed to talk to people about why they love the arts.
Okay.
And I love the art. That's the job. What an amazing
yeah.
what an amazing thing to do, to find people that want to support what we're doing. But I think with more intention, we can also fill out a really robust part of the industry that needs people that love it as much as, well, all of us do.
Mm, yeah. So going back then, if you were, when you left KU, what was your goal? Do you remember, like, during college thinking, this is what I want to do, or?
So actually, I did internships at the time. I thought I was going to go into publishing. I did an internship in publishing, and it was not the environment I wanted to be in. And then I did an internship in New York following a study abroad program in Scotland. But I was in New York for summer for what was then... Does anyone remember Court TV? It's not Court TV anymore. It's now True TV.
Okay.
But Court TV.
Court TV.
So I worked in New York for a summer at Court TV in their scripted programming department.
Really?
And as a result of that, got to see sort of this other side of the entertainment industry. And I thought that one of the things I potentially wanted to do was work for a talent agency.
Okay.
And as you look at talent agencies, and at the time, and this was almost 20 years ago, you know, they were still very much mailroom up model, right?
Sure.
Started
yes,
mailroom.
Yes. Right.
Almost starve for 20 or 30 years before you can ever actually have a career of reputation. And as I was looking for jobs after I graduated, I was in New York several times. I had a boyfriend up there at the time. So I thought that's where I wanted to be. And then I sort of haphazardly applied for a paid summer internship at Starlight Theater. and thought, well, it's paid, and so I'll see, you know, at least then I'm an adult.
I can be home.
Yeah. And when I did the math on what the paid internship would pay me versus what, and I got an offer to work for what was then just William Morris.
Okay.
Starlight paid internship paid more than what William Morris's starting salary was.
Starting at the
And I rate. Thought, I don't, I mean, I think I'll starve if I take this job in New York.
And being in New York, of course, right, naturally, yes, of course.
So yeah. I was like, you know, I think I love Starlight, even though I thought I'd get out of Kansas City at the time, I made this choice to take this paid summer internship, which turned into full-time employment. And 16 years later, I'm going to be the CEO next spring.
That's life. All about the choices we make. And that's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. When did you meet Chris then? When did Chris come in? When did you meet your husband?
So we will have been married for 9 years
okay.
this November.
Okay.
We've been together for, I guess, 12. So somewhere in the middle.
I love that. And he's become a theater person now.
Yeah. We have a blended family. So my two oldest are stepdaughters.
That's what you said. Yeah.
And my son is mine. He has my maiden name. And so we both had kids at the time. And I just remember I was actually doing event management for Starlight when we met. So that's okay. Pre-fundraising. I was doing, remember I said 8 job titles.
Yes.
I was doing event management for nonprofits in Kansas City at the time. Starlight had a for-profit subsidiary called Epic. That's where Donna was.
Right. Is that the place where you were first hired?
It was through
Donna Tamlinson at Epic Productions. Okay. Entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Epic Entertainment and then Epic Events. So, and that was kind of interesting because event management, when I got into it, and particularly because of Donna Tamlinson, who's this great local actress and, and events leader, she approached events like theater.
Okay.
So it was all about rooting things in storytelling. So that resonated as someone who loved the arts and saying, well, here's a career where I can still apply this love of theater and the arts and storytelling and help other, you know, nonprofits and help Kansas City businesses to be able to tell their stories. So it's kind of this blending.
Yeah. So what was your first job then with Epic? What
as
was
an
your
event first? Coordinator.
Event coordinator. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was, again, because doesn't Epic go out all around the city?
So we managed all the things that happened at Starlight.
Okay.
And then we had clients all over the city, and we traveled with some nationally as well, all over the place. So it was a great way to also learn Kansas City and sort of our organizations that are here, too.
And so you were Epic. You were then with Epic for a while then?
Yes, almost 10 years.
8 positions you said you went through
uh-huh.
to get to where you are right now.
Uh-huh.
And isn't Epic in another building? Is that right? Does Epic have its own space?
So
I'm trying to remember.
Epic, so we have administrative offices on both sides of the actual theater at Starlight. So if you're looking at the stage, there's offices on both sides.
Okay.
And so Epic used to be on the west side.
Right.
So if you're looking at the stage over on your right, that's where we started. We went through a strategic plan a few years ago and ended up dissolving that as sort of a separate subsidiary. Donna was nearing retirement age, wanted to do kind of her own thing. So it's not there. It doesn't exist anymore. We do all of our events internally and just stay focused at the theater.
Okay.
So when that was kind of coming into play is when Rich Baker at the time sort of pulled over and was like, would you ever consider doing fundraising for the, theater?
Got it.
Windy road.
Windy, windy road.
But lots of different corners of the Starlight universe.
Yes. We are here on Show People with Lindy Rood Clifford, the CEO of Starlight, for at least a little while longer. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back. And we are back on Show People. I'm glad you're joining us here today. And we've got Lindsay Rood Clifford and, of course, our incredible board up. Kate Redmond is here having a good time talking all about Lindsay's life in the theater and her new chapter, which is absolutely amazing. Absolutely incredible. Was it a natural thing for you to get into the chief operating officer position? Was that something that you, through all your years at Starlight, you were like, prepared for, I was ready for this? And
so I often tell people that I never really had job titles in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I only had the kind of relationship I wanted to have with my career.
Okay.
So those 8 job titles have just been a result really of the kind of work I wanted to do and the kind of life I wanted to lead. And that's naturally led to sort of advancement in this really organic way that I certainly sometimes look over my shoulder. I'm like, is this happening in real life? But I think when I think about the COO role, and especially since it was really created as a part of this transition to CEO, it was really this natural evolution of continuing to expand what I was involved with at Starlight. And the internal and professional relationships that we have, and how we're just trying to advance, frankly, a lot of different things right now. Coming out of the pandemic, like every theater organization, we kind of had a reckoning with, okay, do we want a boomerang back? Do we want, I know I said the summer of 2019 is kind of what it felt like this summer, but I would say we don't want a fully boomerang either. We're trying to think, what did we learn out of the last 2 years? What are the opportunities out of the last 2 years? As we think about future leadership, what are the opportunities there to do things, to build on this great legacy, but also continue to expand and do new things too?
And things that might have not come up if it wasn't for COVID and being...
Precisely. I mean, that's... COVID was terrible, don't get me wrong. I don't think we ever thought there would be a summer at Starlight with no shows. And we had a summer at Starlight with no shows.
With no shows.
At the same time, I think that forced us all to do a lot of reflection on, so then what is Starlight? What is the heart of Starlight? And when you take the shows out, what kind of remained? And frankly, it was our education programming that continued, our community programming. It was a staff that we were very fortunate to be able to fully retain, which a lot of theaters weren't.
Right.
And then as we thought about what it was moving forward, because we dabbled like everyone did in virtual programming digital programming. And I would say we land on the side of saying, you know, while that might complement things in the future, this is about being together live in person for theater and music.
Yes, yes.
You can't replicate that. There's a movie and TV industry for that.
Right. It's not the same thing. It was the way we could do it for this time being, but it's like, let's move back to live, because again, it's not the same thing. What were some of your discoveries then? What did you take away? What did Starlight in general and the team kind of take away of like, we got to do this differently? Or
I think the biggest thing is when we had the time and space to think about what that Starlight tradition is. Even things that I think we used to, and there were also other shifts, of course, happening in the world during those 2 years as well. But things that when I first started at Starlight, we'd go, is this something we feel like we have to apologize for? The weather, for example, being an outdoor theater. Right. I got to tell you, being an outdoor theater was a great thing in the pandemic when suddenly being outside was the place to be. And I think that helped us shift to say, we're never going to be the Kauffman Performing Arts Center, and we don't want to be. This is an outdoor theater experience, and we need to sort of fully embrace that. That's what's unique and different. And instead of going, you know, I think we still want to do things like add the big fans and make it cooler and figure out how to create guest comfort, but we never want it to not feel like you're outside, because that's part of its magic.
Right.
And I would say the same thing is true for location. When I first started at Starlight, it was in a part of town where sometimes my Southern Johnson County mom would be like, do you feel safe at 2 a.m. when you're closing up the theater? And I think there's been a big shift now in how we think about what an advantage it is to be Starlight Theater east of 71 embedded in communities that are historically underrepresented in arts audiences, and say, gosh, is this an opportunity to bring more people into a Starlight tradition, or even to redefine the tradition? Because it's about being outside, it's about music and theater, but I think our roots in Broadway, our roots in kind of what it's been or what people think of when they think of Starlight, I think it allowed us to say, what else could it be? Because at the root, it's about theater and music. So why would we limit ourselves if it's about these live arts experiences and getting people to this particular space? Because there's no Starlight. There's no other Starlight. I mean, in the world, there's certainly other amphitheaters. There's certainly other theaters that do this similar programming. But this particular place, and we tend to kind of forget that. And I think that's what we realized too, is for being here for 75 years, sometimes we as a city sort of forget we have this great thing in this park. Over here, you know, Swope Park's kind of a magical place too.
It is.
So I think that was one of our big discoveries, is, okay, how do we get more people to be out here? We know the people that come love it, but how do we make sure we're introducing more people and getting more families and young people out here, so that it's not just staying home and watching TV?
Which is easier to do right now. Right. Yes, it's true. It's sometimes people just want to just sit on the couch, but it's like, get out. Yes, Kate.
I'm just going to have to give Bob the Bat a cameo. Where else are you going to go see a show where Bob the Bat is going to make a cameo almost every show?
Every performance.
Every I was just telling someone, because the bats are sort of a starlight secret until you've either performed there or you know where they hide in the mm-hmm. theater. Do you both, have you been up the pergolas where the bats nest before? Ever?
No.
Okay, next time you're out, okay. you have to see it, because one of the best things is you also, as a result of all the bats at Starlight, nobody gets mosquito bites, right? Mm-hmm.
Like the bats very take few care of the problem. There.
Right.
But they roost up in the pergolas that run up alongside the theater. There's these cracks. And so if you go up towards that top of the hill, you can sometimes find, because if you look down, you'll maybe sometimes see any of the line of bat poop that hasn't been washed away. But they hide up there. And once you tell people that, and that's why they don't get mosquito bites, people are like, we like the bats. What an economical, sustainable solution.
Starlight isn't even paying for it. What a fantastic thing that comes with your tickets. Where do you see Starlight going under your leadership? Dreams for Starlight.
I think my biggest dream for Starlight is just that it is a place that people really believe is for everybody in this city, in this region. Maybe no matter what the history has been or who they think it's been for, that we continue to think about this and embrace that it is a magical place to experience theater and music. It is something we should have great pride in, and we should want everybody to be a part of. And I think part of that is making sure we have lots of opportunities for young people to get out there. Mm-hmm. I think we have to have lots of opportunities for people that otherwise wouldn't have access to the arts and arts experiences to get out there. I think we have to continue to think of things like accessibility and what population needs are so that they can come out there and feel like they really belong. Because mm-hmm. that's what I think most people that have been in the arts understand about the arts, is it's this great inclusive place of belonging. So what an impact it could have on a community if we could get more people into that space. And because we're so big, I do think we have this really unique opportunity to look at how we're doing that. Mm-hmm. And also to help the larger arts ecosystem, right? Yes. So how can we also expand our partnerships to the other arts organizations in this city to say, you know, yes, you normally have 1,500 seats at Kauffman, but what if, I went to the ballet last night, what if we had the ballet at Starlight more than the first year coming out of the pandemic when they came out there? People loved that.
Yes.
So once a year to have the ballet, but then also to have, you know, free community tickets are a huge part of our foundation. And as we look ahead, it's to say everything that we do should include that.
Yes.
And that means also then saying, hey, are there other organizations that can come in that we can get people introduced to the arts and other art forms in that way? So I'd like to see us be a more integral part of the arts ecosystem with that in mind, to really say, how do we give just what we know is the positive impact of theater and music to more people that we know?
Because you are such a leader in the city in the arts, as far as arts goes. So it's like it's true. You're kind of helping to guide where we all want to go. And I love, and Kansas City is also a family when it comes to the arts as well. So that makes sense to bring everybody together and find ways to collaborate.
Well, Lindsay, you also do a lot of volunteering in the Kansas City area.
Mm-hmm. I do. In my free time right now.
That's great.
So I serve on the Association of Fundraising Professionals. I'm actually getting ready to chair that board coming up. I'm a former Kansas City Chamber of Commerce Centurion. I serve on their alumni board. And then, as I said, I have a scout as a 14-year-old. And so volunteering is a pretty big part of what he's grown up doing. And so he loves volunteering at Harvesters, and he loves doing food pantries. He likes to be a personal shopper.
Nice. Where do you see Starlight going as far as, because I know you not only present Broadway National Tours and Concerts, but it has a long history of also self-producing as well. Where do you see that moving? Is that going to be something that's...
It's a great question, and one that we're sort of tackling right now internally as we're working on a strategic plan. I do think that it's sort of a unique secret weapon for us, mm-hmm. that we are not just a venue that brings in national tours, but that we have this opportunity to produce. I think I would like to see us make that probably something. Right now we do one show a year, typically. Mm-hmm. And I would say that we want to look at sort of programmatic makeup and go, hey, what are the shows that are going to be the best thing to bring people to the theater?
Yeah.
And if we can get those through tours, great. if it that means, you know, three tours and we produce two, or what that makeup is, I think I'm really open to what that looks like, because I think the biggest thing, and I know you mentioned it from your husband, is people have these memories of being on that stage.
Yes.
When we produce. So I think looking at how we can do that in a way that makes sense for the theater, part of why we moved away from it was it's very expensive to do. But I think understanding that it's also a piece of our mission, and how if we're bringing people out as young people, having that next place for them to go and to be able to perform on stage, whether that's a Starlight produced show or a partnership show. You know, if we, in our indoor series, we've talked about, wouldn't it be great if the Coterie came out once a year? Wouldn't it be great if Spinning Tree did something there once a year? You know, how can we have this other place and take advantage of that geography? So I think it's all on the table for the future. I think we're trying to make decisions, like I said, that really, really give us the kind of opportunity to get as many people out there as possible.
Yeah, I think that's great. You're probably being asked this a lot, I'm sure. What do you say when people say you are the first woman president and CEO of Starlight? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to Kansas City?
So it's one of those, it's one of those milestones that you feel humbled to be filling the role on.
Right.
Some pressure, because you know that you're a first. I think anytime you're a first anything, there's some pressure with that, where you want to make sure that, again, a year from now, people are like, man, they made a good choice, right? And at the same time, I would say part of me says it should be a non-issue. Being a woman isn't why I'm qualified for this role. Right. I'm glad to see that Starlight's making a choice and had a board of directors and key stakeholders for whom that wasn't a barrier.
Right.
And not that it necessarily has been in the past, but I think when you have a history of one demographic being in the leadership roles, it's nice to see a change and know that there was at least some intention or thoughtfulness behind that. So more than anything, I would say maybe it's a little overdue for women in the theater world, but there's transition in leadership's happening everywhere right now, particularly, I mean, in the theater industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm mostly just really happy to be a part of it. And I don't take for granted what it is to be a first. And I hope that it's a first of many. And there's some great quote about leaders where at some point you'll stop talking about it being a woman leader or a black leader, and we'll just talk about leaders.
Leaders.